I'd like to introduce you to a fellow by the name of Barry Knowles. Barry was diagnosed with mesothelioma, better known as asbestos cancer, in February of 2010. And typically, people who are diagnosed with mesothelioma are expected to live about 6 to 9 months after diagnosis. I had a look into this. And in Barry's case, they said your best case scenario is you've got 12 months. He's alive now in 2015, I'm very pleased to report, and sitting in this studio with us, which incidentally he helped to build in 1984, which I find really interesting because I was pointing to bits in the studio and said, did you do that? Because Barry was a carpenter and joiner by trade. And he's written a very, very interesting book, which also highlights his battle against this disease. It's called Reflections Through Reality. And I would imagine that sitting in a doctor's office and being told that you've got mesothelioma would give you a very nasty dose of reality. Barry Knowles, welcome along. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Chris.
You've had a you've been launching the book tonight.
Yes.
With the help of Larry Graham, who's somebody who's got tons of energy and is always really good at helping doing these kind of things. When you sat down to write this book, what was the story that you wanted to tell? I mean, there's the obvious story, but what was really in your head and you said, I'm going to write a book?
Well, when the challenge was put to me, Chris, which was, three years ago this month, actually, by a guy from Slater and Gordon, a general manager there, Siri Wardenen, he had heard my story from my daughter. And he said to me, you need to write that story. It's unique, it's inspiring, and people need to know about it.
What made your story unique in his opinion?
The fact that I was still alive and not having any treatment after, well, at that stage, but over 2 years.
When was the last time you received any treatment?
It's a bit over 2 years now. I had an infection that required draining.
Mm-hmm.
That lasted for about 5 months, but that's all gone. I'm not having any treatment now.
Has the disease progressed?
Well, they keep telling me it hasn't. I don't believe it has. I don't suffer from any new symptoms. I have very few difficulties. In myself, I feel great. So the latest x-rays show that it's pretty well static.
I suppose it's a question that you can't answer, but the obvious question is, what makes you different from others?
Well, no, I can't answer that.
I'm surprised the doctors haven't jumped up and down and wanted to answer that question. Because, well, oddly enough, within your body, within your makeup, may lie the solution to this disease. Because obviously your body is able to deal with it in the way that unfortunately other people's bodies are not.
Yeah, well, that's very interesting, Chris. You're right on the button there. I'm working very closely with Professor Bruce Robinson,
mm-hmm.
Out there at the Harry Perkins Cancer Institute. And he has a theory that my immune system has fought back and now is holding the tumour at bay. And we're going to enter some more studies shortly to see whether that theory of his is actually the answer to the problem.
Well, I guess also the other thing about that, I mean, it's good news for you, but what it does say is that we do have examples of humans who are able to have their immune system recognise that this is something that shouldn't be there and say, right, let's go and have the fight. And I guess that might be the difference between yourself and somebody who succumbs to the disease. Their body isn't able to recognise that there is a problem there.
Yeah, well, I think they're looking for the clue that causes that trigger to happen. And yeah. They've been trying that for some time. I mean, Bruce obviously is the guy to talk to about that in medical terms.
Yep.
But if I can help in the battle that we all face, I mean, it's something that's going to go on for another 100 years, perhaps. We need to find a cure.
Mm-hmm. Well, Larry Graham's sitting there. I know he's itching to say something.
Oh, look, the point of what Barry's been saying is exactly right. It's almost impossible to eradicate asbestos out of our system now. We can minimise the risk.
Mm.
This is going to go on for another 100 years, And we just cannot go on killing people as a consequence of just being alive in Australia and being exposed to asbestos. We have to focus on finding a cure for the disease. And people like Barry offer the best possible chance for medical research. Of course, the problem is there aren't enough dollars for medical research, and that's the, one of the wonderful things Barry's done is by producing the book, all the proceeds are going to medical research into mesothelioma.
I think one thing that we forget is we tend to think, and we've always heard the story about someone whose father worked in Whitney, and they worked among the blue asbestos, and people who worked on the wharves and loaded the blue asbestos, but we forget about the fact that basically any house built prior to the mid-1980s in this state contained asbestos. So people who want to do DIY on that 1970s house in Greenwood, for example, are likely to come across asbestos, whether they realise it or not, and they potentially could put themselves at the same sort of risk that Barry put himself.
Chris, one of the things that, Barry is doing is joining with the Asbestos Diseases Society in trying to get people to understand that. For example, you say about renovations. It's a little known fact that most of the carpet underlay that was used in your houses in the 1960s and 1970s had an asbestos base to it. So people ripping up a carpet in a house can expose themselves to asbestos.
And what about old cars with the brake linings that used asbestos? There was a fellow who I think successfully sued Ford for his mesothelioma as a result of being a mechanic working on their cars.
And look, the thing that drives me and gets me angry about it, and Barry's been very good at calming my anger and keeping me focused.
Barry strikes me as a very cool, calm and collected gentleman, which I suspect Barry is no... I wouldn't mind betting that that isn't also part of the reason why you've been so resilient when it comes to being able to deal with this disease.
You may be correct there. I mean, I've got it. There's nothing I can do about it. As we've said, there's no cure. I'm fortunate enough to be still here after going through a year of a lot of difficulties with it. I have a faith that leads me every day to believe that I'm here for a purpose, and every day something new opens up. I mean, you asked me about the book. That all started on that walk back from Kalgoorlie, raising funds with the Asbestos Disease Society, just through someone saying to me, "You write the book, and if you're alive when it's finished, I'll publish it." And
that was a pretty good deal.
It was a very good deal. I think he thought he was
on
the winner.
Called incentive.
But so it's now been printed, and through that journey, which has been now 3 years to this month, we've launched the book, and as Larry has just said, we're using that as a catalyst to raise funds towards funding some research into the particular issues we just talked about with myself. And as time evolves, we want to launch a foundation, a charity foundation.
It strikes me that, and I heard somebody make a comment once, and it was related to another form of cancer. And it was one of those things where they make the comment, you have to go away and think about it. And then you think, yeah, they're right. And they made the comment that they were really unfortunate because they didn't have a sexy cancer. And on face value, you thought, what on earth are you talking about? And what that meant was, it wasn't one of those cancers that was predominant in the public mind. You know, if we think of breast cancer, if we think of prostate cancer, they're cancers that are very prominently in the public mind, even bowel cancer, you know, bowel screening, all the rest of it. They're very much out there. They're very much in the public focus. And so, therefore, people think about them. Unfortunately, people don't think so much about something like mesothelioma, and we're already starting to see the generation of people, like, for example, the DIY people, the people who were tradies. I had a mate who died of mesothelioma. He was a plumber, and he was exposed to the dust because cutting a lot of the pipes that were lined with asbestos. He wasn't working in, inverted commas, the asbestos industry. He was working with asbestos products. We are now starting to see that generation of people be affected. And he wasn't an old man. He was in his 40s when he died. So I think that probably we need to bring this into much sharper focus. And right now there are people all over Perth who are renovating houses.
Yes.
Arguably they're exposing themselves to asbestos products and they don't even know it.
Yeah, that is so true. I mean, we have a disease here that is relatively unknown until you or your mate or your neighbour or really gets it. There are twice as many meso deaths per year in WA to what there is Rotol. That'll bring it into perspective.
Can you imagine the money that would be spent? I'll bring you in, Larry, if I can, because I know with your parliamentary experience, looking on a state level, what would have happened if one year suddenly there were twice as many road deaths as the previous year? What would, forgetting anything else, what would have been the political ramifications of that statistic?
Oh, look, there's absolutely no doubt. We have, I hate to call it hysteria, but we have this huge campaign about road deaths going on. But when you look at the statistics, the amount of road deaths are actually falling.
And have been for years.
By any measure, yes. And have been for 20 years. There's still, you know, 200 people dying as a result of road crashes is not good. And I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is by every measure, the number of people being killed in road accidents is falling. But the number of people being killed by asbestos is increasing. And the funding is exactly the opposite. The funding is increasing in road research, and it is not happening in and around asbestos and asbestos education.
We know about compensation for victims. As part of that compensation, are we seeing money being poured from former asbestos companies, people like James Hardie, for example, into asbestos research?
No. No.
Why not?
Well, there's a simple answer to that. The guilty parties in terms of exposure to asbestos are mining companies, building companies, the people who made the manufacturing gear, yeah, and the governments, right? You've got to understand every time there is a court case settlement, it involves a government.
Yes.
Right?
And it doesn't matter what government we're talking, it is a government.
It is state, federal, and local governments are usually named in every court case, and they are the guilty parties. They keep putting their heads in the sand and have been for 50 years.
Have we, and I haven't investigated this, and after the commercial break, Martin would like to have a chat to you. Barry, are you happy to do that?
Yeah, sure.
All right, Martin, we're going to take a commercial break and we'll be with you. And if you'd like to give us a buzz, by all means, do so. Larry, there used to be, and this obviously was a legal tactic that was employed, that the claim for asbestos-related diseases would die with the claimant. Have we changed the law in that regard? I know it was talked about. Has that actually happened?
I've got to keep my huge head under control. You're speaking to the bloke who wrote the private member's bill, who took it into Parliament and got it through Parliament.
You got it through Parliament.
We are the only state in the nation where that happened, and it is currently being reviewed by the government as to whether it should continue.
Why?
Because they are the guilty parties. And I'm not there. And I'm not saying that to blame my own Trump. It is a matter of fact. I put it through as a private member's bill. And it is a matter of fact that it is before the Law Reform Commission now being reviewed.
Yeah, why would you want to reform something? I just don't understand that.
Well, the answer's because, simple, Chris. Well, they are the guilty party.
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying there.
Right? It's like you being charged with something, found guilty, and then asked what you'd like your sentence to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, actually, you know something? I'd like to ask people with mesothelioma what they would like their sentence to be. That would make a whole new, put a whole new spin on it. We're joined in the studio, as I mentioned, by Barry Knowles, who's a mesothelioma survivor and without doubt of great interest to the medical profession. Was diagnosed with mesothelioma, otherwise known as asbestos cancer, 5 years ago in February of 2010. And at the time they said six. If you're lucky, you'll have 12 months, Barry. Barry's still very much with us. And he's written a book which I recommend. It's called Reflections Through Reality, Mesothelioma, My Journey. And Barry, Martin joins us on the program and would like to have a chat to you. Hi, Martin.
Good evening, gentlemen. About 20 years ago, I was working for Shire, I won't say the name, down in the Great Southern. And we were actually asked to move into a construction site. They were renovating the old library and turning into office space. And they put walls up and we were asked to remove the ceiling, and then circular saws were involved, and the Shire office used to have an asbestos roof, and we were exposed to asbestos. It was dumped on this above ground, wasn't covered at the Shire tip. Had the Asbestos Disease Society come out. It's all a documented case. We went for lung function tests and what have you. And like that's 20 years ago. And the question I was wanting to ask was, is there anything to look out for? I was told that 80% more likely if you're a cigarette smoker to contract it, mesothelioma, or I guess any disease if it's asbestos, I guess.
Okay, Martin, it's Barry here. If I could have a little chat. Asbestos diseases come in different form, as you would obviously be aware, having spoken with the Asbestos Disease Society. And mesothelioma, which I'm au fait with, came to me in a very unusual way, in that I had no symptoms of anything till I fell out of a tree and broke four ribs on my right side. And when they took an X-ray of that, it showed a shadow at the bottom of my left lung, or in the lining of my left lung. And as I say, there was no symptoms at that stage. A biopsy was taken. It was confirmed to be mesothelioma. And within the time of about 6 weeks from there, I started to get breathless, and all these effects started to come upon me in a big way. But, I mean, the things you look out for yourself out in the real world is become au fait with asbestos, firstly, know what it looks like. And then if you see it being removed or damaged, broken or whatever, particularly if a fire goes into the building and just shatters asbestos into little tiny fibres, which blow all around the neighbourhood and go into your gutters and your clothing if it's on the line and all this sort of stuff. That's the time when you want to be very, very careful how you handle yourself. You don't want to be involved in that if you don't have to be. If you have to be, well, you need to be protected with respiratory gear and suits and so on.
Yeah.
Martin, it's Larry Graham. I'm in a similar boat to you. I'm an old electrician and have been in and out of Whitney many times, both for work and recreation, and have, through my job, have had what you would call significant exposure to asbestos. I've had that recorded with each of my employers, and I go every year to my GP. I'm lucky I've got the same one, and I go off and have a chest X-ray every year. The difficulty with the disease is that it can take up to 30 to 40 years before it manifests itself in you. It can also be very quick. There's no rhyme nor reason to that, but once you're diagnosed with it, it is usually a quick-acting disease. So without overreacting and without being silly about it, it's best to at least have an annual chest X-ray. And if the doctors see anything, they'll get on it very quickly.
Yeah. I've actually got a property in the town, and it's actually surrounded by an asbestos fence, and it's starting to deteriorate quite bad. And I've got my grandson living with us,
Mate, look, if you, I'm certain if you gave the Asbestos Diseases Society a ring, they would be able to put you on to someone who will do an inspection. And they, I know that there is currently arguments going on between the various asbestos lobby groups and local councils about councils actually enforcing their bylaws on asbestos, because they are very, very slack about it.
Yes, well, actually, my one fence, beside the property, actually backs onto a Shire property, and I've asked them where
last thing they want to do is see the have to go halves with you changing the fence over.
Yeah, well, we've talked about that, but yeah, as you know,
Look,
another story.
There's a heap of ways of dealing with that, and as I say, if you ring the Asbestos Diseases Society, I'm absolutely certain they will be able to put you in contact with the people who can help you out, mate.
Good stuff. Thanks very much for that, Martin. Actually, that's you just made a very interesting point there, Larry. You said that in relation to asbestos, local governments are very slack in enforcing their own rules. What are the rules, and specifically, what are the rules they're not enforcing?
Asbestos, it's long and complicated. The brief version is asbestos is a dangerous substance which is required to be controlled and managed. I know of one shire council in Western Australia out of the 140-something. I know of one shire council in Western Australia, and that's the Shire of Harvey, that has a program of identifying and removing asbestos in public places.
One council?
One shire council.
Yeah, I'm aware of another shire council east of Perth that played real hardball when I rang them, because I found a street in their jurisdiction. The asbestos fence, similar to what Martin's been talking about, had been removed by a fencing contractor, and it had been just scattered on the front verge of the property, where children walk past to school, and it's travelled on by other folk.
Do I take it that they weren't very responsive when you said, listen, this is not a good idea, this shouldn't be happening, you need to deal with this stuff?
Well, they flicked past it. I rang the jurisdiction that they suggested who was responsible, who in turn said to me very nicely, you ring back to the health inspector of that council and tell them that it's their responsibility and they need to remove it post haste.
Why would a council pretend that they didn't know what was their responsibility?
Well,
I mean, I sometimes understand why departments duck shove between each other, but I mean, the responsibilities there, I would imagine, are clearly defined in law, and it's not as though it would be a grey area for them.
No, that's right. This particular council, when I went back to them and told them what I'd found out, I was told by the health department that they would do it in due course. And I said to him, I said that wasn't good enough. It had to be removed by tonight. Otherwise, I would be ringing the TV stations to come down and make something of it.
Yeah.
It was removed that day.
Can I just make this point that after something like 3,500 people have died as a result of this product, you shouldn't have to be threatening people with TV channels, should you?
You wouldn't have thought so. What I don't get is the stupidity of them trying to pretend that it wasn't a problem. And for example, as I understand it, there are supposedly very strict regulations in place as to how asbestos is to be handled. So what was a common or garden variety fencing contractor doing just pulling asbestos fencing down anyway?
Breaking the law.
Yep.
So who enforces the law? And what happens when people of that ilk end up getting sick, like Barry, and dying?
Yeah. You have a court case and there will be a settlement arrived at by way of compensation, and that's the absolute disgrace of all this asbestos stuff. And look,
what about the person who will be able to identify, and Larry, you know certainly from your time in politics that this is liable to happen, when a person is able to identify that the reason why they are able to expose themselves to asbestos is because somebody in authority didn't enforce regulations that were already in place, and so therefore they end up suing the statutory authority for failing to enforce the regulations.
Yes, and they win. They still end up dead, but they win.
That's
and
a that's sad thing.
That's
you're
the
just
disgrace.
As dead, aren't you?
Yes, yeah. Well, that's the disgrace.
I think, Chris, too, another sad outcome from that is that Mrs. Jones or little Billy on his way to school may have picked up a fibre from that, when I say pick up, inhaled a fibre from that fence.
Mm.
It does, as Larry said, it takes perhaps 40 or 50 years to show itself.
Yeah.
They won't be able to determine where they got that from. They wouldn't have a clue. Mm. So they've got no way of taking action against anybody. Mm.
Yeah, it's a very sad set of circumstances. Yeah. How do they – something that – it's a very good question, actually. It's just been SMSed to me by John. He says, how do they determine an asbestos lung cancer as opposed to what you might call a standard lung cancer?
There are two different sorts of cancer that come from asbestos. One's asbestosis,
yep.
which is a fibrosis disease,
yes.
and that's easily done. The other one's mesothelioma, which is actually...
It's a cancer, isn't it?
Yes, it's a cancer on the lining or the external linings of the lung. So it's in a different place.
Yep.
And they do it by way of biopsies and chemical analysis, physical analysis, and it's easily done and easily demonstrable.
Gotcha.
That's a 9:30 at night word, isn't
demonstrable. I love it when Larry gets technical. Hi, Nancy.
Oh, hi. How are you?
We're very well. And thank you for your call.
It's lovely listening to Barry and knowing that there is hope out there for a lot of people, isn't it?
Certainly is. Yeah. That is no question.
Yeah, thanks.
Barry, I'm really pleased to hear that you're doing okay.
Thank you,
I've
Nancy.
I've got a friend who's got mesothelioma and he's been diagnosed about 3.5 years ago now. And he's still going, but he's not really well. He's just spent 12 days in hospital. But I'll tell you what happened to him, Barry. He was actually in the Navy going back to the 60s, right?
Yes.
And, of course, there was a lot of asbestos because he was in the boiler room.
Yes, that's right.
Anyway, he's now 70-something, and he got a payout from whoever, or the Navy paid him out. But because they paid him out, they take his half his pension off him, which I think is so wrong. That's what they're doing. Because they paid him out, because he got a payout, I don't know how much that was because we've never... But because of that, he's now not getting, I think he gets $600 less a fortnight on the pension, which I think is so unfair. But that's for government, isn't it?
Yeah, I think with this one, Nancy, I'll hand it over to Larry. He's right on top of all that, so I'll just stand by.
Nancy, please get your friend to go to the Asbestos Diseases Society. When I was in here with Paul Murray, it's a good while ago, we had Robert Vajakovich and the head of the Centrelink on talking about exactly that problem, and there are ways to move and there is room to move. And I'm not saying that everything will be fixed instantly and it can be fixed, but if your friend gets in touch with the Asbestos Diseases Society, they have the ability to negotiate their way through that minefield.
Okay, oh, that's good to hear, actually, Larry, because it's so unfair, you know, to think that... I mean, he took the payout because they told him he had 6 to 12 months to live.
Yep.
And, so he thought, well, you know, at least he'd leave his wife with something.
Yep.
But, you know, he's gone 3.5 years now, and we're hoping he goes another 3.5 or 10 years, which would be lovely.
Be beautiful.
But I will buy that book, actually, and give it to him because it sounds fantastic, and I'm so happy to hear that you're going well, Barry.
Okay, Nancy, to buy the book or find out more about myself, if you'd like to get on the web, www.reflections.org.au.
And that'll
give you some information, and if you want to contact us from there, please do.
I will. Okay, well, thanks.
Nancy.
Thanks, Barry, and I might get my friend to contact you because he needs a bit of support, and I think you'd be a great support.
Well, Nancy, in that regard, we do have, we don't call it a support group as such, but we have a coffee and chat morning once a month on the first Monday. We meet together. There's about 18 of us at the moment who are involved in this disease in some way or another. And we've been going now for about 15 months, and everybody's really enjoying the company and the sharing of their journey.
Yeah. So, well, I'm quite sure my friend would love that, and I will let him know for sure.
All right, then. Thanks, Nancy.
No, thanks very much for your call, Nancy.
It's reflections.org.au.
Actually, it's good. It's a very, very simple website. Yep. Reflections.org, that's O-R-G.au.
And, mate, the book's $24.99. and every cent of that goes into research for mesothelioma.
And it's a really good book, and it also, of course, shares the fact that Barry has a story to share, which he shared, which is much appreciated, Barry.
Yeah, thank
and thank you very much for coming in. And
thank
in the
you,
future,
Chris.
If there's anything else that we can do to help, you know where we are. Feel free to give us a call.
Lovely. Thanks, Chris.